Scrap, 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 scrap.
Like,
I'm mean, I'm fierce, I'm mad, I'm rude, I got that pro fighter attitude. I'm in the octagon with the podcast on, let's talk about it on Scraptitude. You know I've been the best, grab my belt and begin to flex so wild I might hit the ref. We got the winner's circle segments and the 2-on-5 takeaways with Tim and Jeff, so just kick back, grab a brew, it's fight night, so you know what we have to do, whether a power punch or a grapple move. You know we got you covered on Scraptitude, so just kick back, grab a brew, it's fight night, so you know what we have to do, whether a power punch or a grapple move. You know we got you covered on Scraptitude, yeah.
Scrap, 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 scrap,
yeah.
Scrap, scrap, scrap,
scrap, scrap,
yeah. Scrap, scrap, scrap,
scrap, scrap,
yeah. Scrap, scrap, scrap.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to Tim Talk 291, brought to you by the Scraptitude Podcast. This is your host, Timothy Lewis, taking you coast to coast, doing the most. Thank y'all for tuning in. Today we have a scintillating slate of fights. Probably the best card that we've had in a while, but before that, we have to get into the formalities. For those uninitiated, this podcast combines three key perspectives: an aggregate of the odds makers, that of the data courtesy of the Scraptitude Analytics database, and lastly, that of myself, Timothy Talkin, a decade plus analyst, viewer, fan of the sport, here to fill in all the gaps in between. For each Tim Talk podcast, I curate a selection of fights that interest me, usually on the main card, but always sprinkling in some prelims, and I give you the breakdown. I let you know what the odds makers are thinking. Yeah, I already said all that. And ultimately, what I try to do is I give you a comprehensive set of information. At the end, I'll give you my pick, what I personally am betting. But ultimately, I want you to have all the information at your disposal, everything you can to make an informed decision with your money come fight night. However, before we get into 291's slate of fights, we have to cover the previous podcast, Tim Talk 290. To be frank, I came away from this event disappointed. I did not come out ahead, but I did not come out as behind as the odds makers. The fights that were covered on Tim Talk 290 included Dan Hooker versus Jalen Turner, Robert Whittaker versus Dricus du Plessis, Bran Moreno versus Alexandre Pantoja, and Alexander Volkanovski taking on Yair Rodriguez. Jalen Turner, the favorite on the card, lost, broke that orbital of Dan Hooker, broke his arm, gassed, couldn't get it done, came in overweight before the fight. That is why you always wait until weigh-ins before placing your wagers. I still thought he had it, admittedly, but Dan Hooker hung tough and won a very competitive decision. Robert Whittaker came into the du Plessis fight, and I still can't explain that one to you. I have no words. He looked like he had COVID-19 Delta. That man was dead walking. Dricus du Plessis should not have been able to do what he did, but to his credit, his physicality, his persistence, he made the most of the moment, and as a big underdog, upset Robert Whittaker. Did not see that coming. Now, I do get a little bit of credit for telling you Alexandre Pantoja was going to three-peat in his defeating of Brandon Moreno. That one locked in true and was a outcome-specific prediction with the decision victory. Lastly, it was Alexander Volkanovski versus Yair Rodriguez. And as expected, Volkanovski came out on top. Not as tough of a fight for him as I was expecting. Yair started to get going a little bit, but Alexander Volkanovski is just too damn good, too versatile, too athletic. He did not let that one go to a decision like I predicted. Inside the distance, third round TKO for the current pound-for-pound number one fighter in the world. So that does it for our UFC-Tim Talk 290 podcast. Let's get down to business. Tim Talk 291.
Yo, yeah.
First on the docket is a hand-selected prelim bout between CJ Vergara and Vinicius Salvador. I picked this fight because the flyweight division deserves more love, and like all the fights I'm covering on this card, mainly from the main card, the odds are quite close. Currently, CJ Vergara clocks in at a -154 favorite to the +125 underdog of Salvador. In terms of percentages, that converts to a 60.6% implied likelihood of victory for Vergara to the 55.6% implied likelihood for Salvador. This fight should be a fun one for the fans, a low-key banger. Both men prefer to stand and fight. Vergara, characterized by his stocky nature, and Salvador for the way he appears to drunkenly wing his punches. Now, the odds makers are rolling with Vergara here, likely because technically he's a little bit tighter with his boxing, a little bit more fundamentally sound, likes to chop the leg, likes to hit the body, hits all three, I can't call them quadrants, sections of target distribution, leg, body, head, with regularity. He's also shown to be the slightly more durable man, but only marginally so, and not in a way that really skews my interpretation of the volatility of him in reference to Salvador. Now, Salvador, at 5 years the junior to CJ Vergara, has 19 fights to the 16 fights for Vergara with a similar level of competition. He's also a born, bred finisher, with 93% of his wins coming by TKO and 7% coming by submission. Do the math. He finishes fights. If only he had the same success finishing his damn haircut. Now, I can see why watching tape the more conventional orthodoxy of CJ Vergara appears to be an easier or, you know, a less volatile bet. You kind of know what you're going to get compared to the erratic and fundamentally unsound and just, to be honest, downright eccentric Salvador. But I'm not going to get too bogged down in the film here. Neither of these guys is one technical detail away from surmounting the ranks of their division, and I don't believe that's what's going to be the determining factor in this fight. For me, the most potent variable at play is the age-adjusted experience advantage of Vinicius Salvador. And if I'm saying that first name wrong, I don't give a shit. I think he's going to win this fight. I'm taking him at the money line, aggregate underdog of plus 125.
Yo, yeah.
Moving to the main card, we have Michael Chiesa taking on fan favorite Kevin Holland. Currently, Michael Chiesa sits at a plus 120 underdog to the minus 147 of Kevin Holland. That equates to a 45.5% implied likelihood of victory for the Maverick Michael Chiesa to the 59.5% implied likelihood for Kevin Holland. This bout is shaping up to be a classic striker versus grappler matchup and represents a fascinating crossroads for each man. Michael Chiesa is coming off of two losses, getting submitted by Vicente Luque and then dropping a decision to the rising Sean Brady. Kevin Holland, alternatively, is coming off of a dramatic knockout victory against Santiago Ponzinibbio, a bout in which he could barely throw his right hand after breaking it against Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. This issue with his hand is symbolic of what could be termed a mismanaged career by Kevin Holland. He went into the Ponzinibbio fight not knowing if he could throw the hand and largely choosing not to. I give him a pass for the Wonderboy Thompson fight because he did get injured in that one and showed tremendous resilience. And then in the bout before that, took on Khamzat Chimaev, late notice, overweight, and succumbed to an early submission loss. Now, I imagine that Michael Chiesa is looking at that as well as the Vettori and Brunson fights and identifying a strong wrestling base as Kevin Holland's weakness. However, Khamzat Chimaev, Michael Chiesa, is not. He's not going to enjoy that level of athleticism or tenacity. Kevin Holland is 30 years old, and he's at his ideal weight class here, where his 6'3" height and his 81-inch reach can truly be maximized. Beyond that, the two have faced similar levels of competition, but Kevin Holland has been much more active and has many more career fights. On top of that, Kevin Holland has more UFC fights and a higher UFC win rate. So among the best competition that the two are respectively fighting, Kevin Holland actually has done slightly better, something that I imagine many people didn't consider when focusing on who is ostensibly the veteran in this fight. But what really tips the scale for me here is the respective loss by finish rate. Michael Chiesa has lost 22% of his 22 fights by finish. Interestingly enough, for the submission grappler and wrestler that Chiesa is, all of those finish defeats have come by way of submission. Kevin Holland is a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, which I suppose could come as to some controversy, knowing the levels of black belts that do exist, but he does have legit grappling credentials. I think this is a good opportunity for the prime Kevin Holland to show off his developed wrestling defense along with his striking and potentially his submission profile. I'm going to be taking him by decision or submission, which you can lock in at plus 240 on DraftKings.
Yo, yeah.
The third out of the five fights I will be covering for this Tim Talk episode is Stephen Wonderboy Thompson versus Michel Pereira. Currently, Stephen Thompson is a minus 154 favorite to the plus 126 aggregate underdog of Michel Pereira. In terms of percentages, that converts to a 60.6% implied likelihood of victory for Thompson to the 44.2% implied likelihood for Michel Pereira. Despite the way he looks, shocker, I know, Stephen Thompson is 40 years old. Holy shit, where does the time go? Across from him is a man that some thought of as a joke fighter, if you will. Michel Pereira didn't appear to be serious. He would do backflips, get himself disqualified, and generally didn't seem committed to competing at the highest level. But we look up and all of a sudden he's on a five-fight winning streak. And intermingled in there is some good competition. Pereira is big for this weight class. He is athletic and he has versatility. It's time to start taking him seriously. Now, it's no secret what Stephen Thompson is going to do. He'll switch his stances, he'll pick his shots, and he'll counter you to oblivion if you get sloppy. He has dynamic kicking, and despite his advanced age for the sport, he still shows nimble footwork as well as remarkable quickness. And when he's presented with the right matchup, somebody who wants to stand and bang with him, whether that is Vicente Luque or Jeff Neal or Kevin Holland, he's still able to duke it out with the best of them. But unlike those aforementioned names, Michel Pereira is something different. Namely, he presents praiseworthy versatility, outlanding opponents by 6.55 significant strikes per round throughout his UFC career, while also notching 0.53 takedowns per round. His explosiveness allows him to leap in and out of the pocket and disguise his techniques. It's hard to know what's coming, which makes him difficult to counter. That said, there's an easy steelman case for Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Traditionally, he's had good takedown defense, even though that's faltered recently against Bilal Muhammad and Gilbert Burns. Furthermore, Michel Pereira has not heavily leaned on his wrestling in any given fight, with the most takedowns he's landed in any UFC contest being three. Should this bout stay standing for the majority, it's easy to see Stephen Thompson leveraging his experience and either landing something big or point fighting his way to victory. That said, it's difficult for me to go with the one-dimensional 40-year-old who's going to be at a size and athleticism disadvantage against an opponent who has entered their prime, has superior age-adjusted experience, and possesses a ton of momentum. Personally, I believe that there's enough dynamism and trickery to the unorthodox striking style of Michel Pereira to keep Wonderboy guessing enough not to land anything too potent, while Pereira also mixes in timely takedowns, leveraging his athleticism and swinging enough rounds in his favor to steal a decision. If you like that pick, you can lock it in for plus 275 on DraftKings.
Yo, yeah.
Next, we have the co-main event of the evening, a bout between the Polish power Jan Blachowicz and Alex Poltan Pereira. Currently, this fight is dead even, with some bookies having it minus 110, minus 110. But according to the aggregate odds, Jan Blachowicz is a minus 116 to the minus 107 of Alex Pereira. In terms of percentages, that converts to a nonsensical 53.5% implied likelihood of victory for Blachowicz to the 51% or 51.7% implied likelihood for Pereira. I believe this is the fourth Pereira fight I've covered on Tim Talk. Like Adesanya, he's been very active in the UFC. And unlike Adesanya, who has a extended resume in the context of mixed martial arts, there's a lot more guesswork to be done with Pereira. He's had preferential matchups that helped him land that title fight opportunity against Adesanya. And now to compound on that mystery, he's moving up to 205 pounds and taking on a top flight contender in Jan Blachowicz. However, Jan Blachowicz does not come with without questions of his own. At 40 years old, he's really pushing it for a top level fighter. Not a lot of guys at his age doing what he's doing. Furthermore, he took a substantial beating in his last bout out against Magomed Ankalaev. There is some question if the beating for Blachowicz or the recent knockout for Pereira will have any compounding effects coming into this bout. While I mentioned that Jan Blachowicz is the advanced age of 40 years old, Alex Pereira is no spring chicken either at 36. Beyond that, there is a massive gap between the two in the context of mixed martial arts experience, with 39 career mixed martial arts bouts for Jan Blachowicz to just 9 for Pereira. I've gone back and forth in this fight, and it's no surprise considering how close the odds are. There is a strong case to be made for either man. For example, we've seen Jan Blachowicz struggle with a explosive, athletic, and devastating striker in Thiago Silva. Now he faces another one in Alex Pereira, who might be even more lethal. Alternatively, Alex Pereira is fighting the most comprehensively skilled opponent of his career. There's no more softball matchups for Alex Pereira. He's achieved UFC gold, and now he's expected to perform at that level. Jan Blachowicz doesn't just have the power to put your lights out. He also possesses the wrestling acumen to take you down and the Brazilian jiu-jitsu to submit you. While I have been impressed with Alex Pereira's ability to pick up the defensive nuances of the grappling arts, for me it is a highly optimistic projection to believe that if this fight ends up in a prolonged grappling context, that Alex Pereira is able to adequately defend himself. The reason why Jan Blachowicz is able to continue competing at this level despite being 40 years old is multifaceted. First, just like at heavyweight, in the light heavyweight weight class, we do see the ability for fighters to prolong their careers. Whether it has to do with the volatility or the capacity for athleticism and explosive dynamic movements at that weight is unclear, but we do see a long-standing pattern of fighters being able to compete at the highest level at an older age at these two highest weight classes. The second attribute that is able to extend a fighter's career is durability. If you can still withstand punishment, you can continue fighting. A lot of fighters degrade in terms of their overall durability, or they just become so easy to hit that their durability is no longer enough to surmount the age-related decline. Lastly is versatility. The ability to mix up your attack and attack your opponent's weaknesses is vital as an aging fighter. Leveraging what you're good at and being able to outthink your opponent, applying those years of experience, is a vital attribute. Jan Blachowicz checks all three of these boxes. He has a lower loss by finish rate, he has superior experience, and he has versatility. And it's not with strikers that he's struggled with so much as grapplers, whether that's Magomed Ankalaev, Glover Teixeira, or Corey Anderson even. It's people that have been able to ground him, that have been able to take him into the grappling element and put him on the defensive, put him onto his back, and force him to be a guard-based jiu-jitsu player, which is not his strong suit. Digging into the numbers, I was able to make a case for both guys, but the case for Alex Pereira did get weaker. We all associate him with this immense technical prowess, and that is justified. But we also have this demigod association of lethality, the power that he possesses. And yes, he clearly hits really freaking hard, and he doesn't have to wind up or lose his technical acumen in order to deliver lethal strikes. But we now have a relatively strong sample size for Alex Pereira that indicates his knockdown rate is a 0.70. That means that he knocks down opponents 0.7 times per 100 significant strikes landed. that actually falls just below Jan Blachowicz. To me, it's clear that Jan Blachowicz poses much more of a threat to Alex Pereira as a striker than Alex Pereira could ever pose to Blachowicz as a grappler. One last swing detail for me is the respective loss by finish rate. Jan Blachowicz has been a very durable fighter throughout his career with just a 10% loss by finish rate through 39 career fights. Through 9 fights for Alex Pereira, he has a 22.2% loss by finish rate. We have to bake in that volatility here. Yes, one of those losses was a submission early in his career, but there's a good chance he ends up having to defend submission attacks by Jan Blachowicz at some point during this fight. The more I break things down, the more I like Jan Blachowicz. The question is, how does he get it done? From my perspective, I'm just going to kind of aggregate the likelihood or the probabilities for the weight class overall. There's a ton of finishes in light heavyweight. Last I charted the data, that you were actually more likely to be finished in a light heavyweight fight than any other weight class, outpacing even heavyweight by a narrow margin. So I'm going with Jan Blachowicz inside the distance. You can lock that in at plus 165 on DraftKings.
Yo, yeah.
Last up, we have the main event of the evening for the legendary BMF, baddest motherfucker belt. It is Dustin Poirier rematching Justin the Highlight Gaethje. Currently, Poirier sits at a minus 149 aggregate favorite to the plus 121 aggregate underdog that is Justin Gaethje. In terms of percentages, that converts to a 59.8% implied likelihood of victory for Poirier to the 45.2% implied likelihood for Justin Gaethje. Both men are 34 years old, and both men find themselves in a similar position to where they were last time they clashed. On the cusp of a title shot and solidifying their respective legacies. So what has changed from the first time they clashed? I'd argue not much, and of that total change, I would allocate most of it to Justin Gaethje, who has refined his approach, become a more cardiovascularly responsible fighter, and honed his technical striking to subject himself to less punishment. He still brings all the brutality and chops legs like nobody else in the sport, but his pace has slowed and he selects his shots with more scrutiny. This could be seen in his bout with Rafael Fiziev, who may have been able to dismantle Justin Gaethje had it been an earlier iteration, a more reckless version, but that was not the case. Gaethje managed to control range beautifully and punished Fiziev and really neutered Fiziev's physicality with that of his own. An impressive performance against one of the so-called new breed in this lightweight division. So does this improvement from Justin Gaethje bridge the gap that existed between him and Dustin Poirier in the first fight? In that bout, we did see Justin Gaethje have a lot of success. That leg kick landed with ferocity and really beat up the interior of the thigh of Dustin Poirier. However, as we know, beating up the inside of the leg is not quite as punishing as beating up the outside of the leg and doesn't compromise the movement to the same degree. Gaethje also sacrificed a lot of headshots trying to employ his physicality against Dustin Poirier. Overall, the strategy was dismal against somebody as tenacious and as durable, as down for a dogfight as Dustin Poirier is, and over time Dustin Poirier was able to break down Justin Gaethje and achieve the fourth round TKO victory. Personally, I don't think these newfound adjustments, this developed technical acumen, is really going to help Justin Gaethje in this fight. Dustin Poirier remains a statistically superior fighter with a lower loss by finish rate, a higher knockdown rate, more takedowns landed per round, more career UFC fights, more career fights overall, leading to a higher level of age-adjusted experience. Dustin Poirier is just a cut above of Justin Gaethje statistically. Also, I don't know that decreasing the pace of the bout really is going to work for Justin Gaethje. He's not going to be able to punish with those outside leg kicks the way he was able to deal with Rafael Fiziev. And I still expect Dustin Poirier to have a superior boxing acumen. I once again believe this fight is going to be a war. I think both men are going to get their shots in, and neither one is going to come out unscathed. Neither is going to fundamentally outclass the other fighter. But on the margins, I see Dustin Poirier winning, and I believe he has more ways to win. But personally, I see this one going to a decision. Both men taking a little bit more of a cerebral approach. Justin Gaethje maybe picking up a couple rounds, but Dustin Poirier in the end out-dogging him, out-techniquing him, outboxing him to a decision victory. You can lock that in on DraftKings at plus 350.
Yo, yeah.
So that wraps up the fights covered for Tim Talk 291. I hope you all enjoyed this program, and if you did, be sure to hit that subscribe button as well as rate and review this program. Remember, we are highly dependent on word-of-mouth marketing. We don't have a marketing budget, so you know what to do. Tell your friends, tell your colleagues, tell like-minded people in the community that this is where you go to listen to a data-oriented perspective ahead of a UFC pay-per-view. Thank you all for tuning in. I hope you all enjoy the fights this weekend, and remember to bet responsibly.